Yeah, well, I was in England. I was 15 years old, and I was in a show called Oliver. I played the Artful Dodger. And David Merrick, the big Broadway producer, came over to see the show before it opened on Broadway because they had another company over in America. And for the first time, he could understand what the Artful Dodger was saying, because being a Manchester boy, I had to learn how to talk like that. So I was talking very slowly like this. And it was the first time he could understand what the Dodger had said. It was a Friday night. Sunday morning, I was on a plane with David Merrick coming to America. I opened on Broadway 2 weeks later. I was nominated for a Tony Award as the Artful Dodger. Well, in the audience that night, not only was the Judy Garland, Frank, and Sammy Davis, and lots of other celebs, Buddy Rich, who became a friend, all these people came to see the show, but also there was some executives from Columbia Pictures, and they saw me and soon after came to see me at the theater and offered me a contract. And in 1963 I was signed to Columbia Pictures on a long-term picture deal, and for them then they had to find the right vehicle for me. They took me to Hollywood during certain periods of release from the show that I was in. It was on for 2 years on Broadway, 2.5 years. And they took me to Hollywood, and I was in a show like I was in Ben Casey. I was in The Farmer's Daughter, all those Bewitched, all those shows that, you know, early shows in the early 60s. I auditioned for Hogan's Heroes. I auditioned for Wacky Ship in the Army, you know, all those things. None of it happened until 65 when the Monkees idea came along and they placed me in that as a contract player. So I was already in the mix before the auditions were held. In fact, I was at a lot of the auditions. I was at Mike Nesmith's audition with my manager at the time, who became the executive producer, Ward Sylvester. And so I was quite in tune with what was going on. We actually went to see all kinds of bands like Arthur Lee and Love. It's a band from the 60s, the kind of Jimi Hendrix-y. And the bass player in the band was good. We thought that he'd be good. They looked at the Loving Spoonful as being a band they could use. They used it different, you know, Stephen Stills was in consideration. So there's many different artists. And I, as I say, was at the beginning because of my contract playing with Columbia. And here was the project they'd waited for. It'd been a couple of years, but I'd finished with Oliver and I was just about to become a Monkee. The friendships that Mickey, Peter, Mike and I had, they were all individual different, obviously, because we were all different characters, and that was the reason why we got our jobs as Monkees. They wanted four guys to be completely different. Mike was from Texas, Mickey was from California, Peter was from Connecticut, and I was from England. So they wanted to basically, is what they said was, if you put your head in the sand and your bum sticking up in the air, then we'd know who it was. And that was basically it. We were all different looking, different characters. As we started to film the TV show in the beginning, we obviously had to suss each other out like normally you do within a relationship. And to me, it was just another cast, another company, three other people that I was taking part in this production with. But as it went along, obviously, it became more that, because this was, despite being on Broadway and having experienced television in England and some other stuff, this was something different, and you could feel it was. I was also 19 years old, 20 years old, so I was full of the fun of the fair, and so were the other guys. We all had our own private individual times with our friends. When we did get together, it was on a Sunday afternoon where Mickey, me, Peter and a bunch of other people, the stand-ins and people we knew, we'd go out to the Valley in Los Angeles and we'd play softball. It was a softball game. And we'd then go to Mickey's pool and swim. And then as the years went on, you know, in 68, 69, there was children involved and, you know, families and all this kind of stuff. More the three of us than Mike. Mike never really came into that scene. He wasn't an athlete, you know, and he never really got that. We never got that side of Michael, you know, casual side. We worked together as a team. Peter and I hung out a couple of times, but it kind of scared me. Peter kind of scared me in a way because he was into the Hare Krishna waterbeds brown rice, and I thought that, you know, that meant sort of like, you know, going to India and becoming a Buddhist monk, you know. I didn't really get, you know, I thought, oh, pretty soon I'll be on the brown rice and the waterbeds, you know. And I hung out with him a few times, and, you know, to the point where, you know, I was over his house in, and, you know, there was, you know, Jim Morrison swimming in the pool with a bottle of whiskey in his hand, and different celebrities and people. Mickey Dolenz was busy at that time trying to develop his own career as a director. He's a fabulous director, got great ideas, and he knows the camera. He's been in the business all his life, so he should know the camera. Mike, it was always a little standoffish. I stayed at his house pre-Monkeys going on the air. Mickey and I had an apartment together in Benedict Canyon soon after that. So we were friends as much as you are at work. And then when you go home, it's not sort of like, OK, I'll see you later. I'm going to go home, going to get changed. And all your workmates here, you know, sometimes, you know, you spend more time with them than you do even with your, you know, your husband, your wife, or your kids. Yet you don't sort of hang out unless it's a special occasion, a birthday party, I'm having a Christmas Eve, a New Year's Eve party. So we weren't that close, but we were as professionals. We supported each other and helped each other. And so I guess, you know, it was a bit of each of those worlds. The Davy Jones in the Monkees pretty much was who I was, as far as the tone of my voice, the dialogue, and the things, you know, that I, you know, said. I used to turn their dialogue around a little bit to suit me, you know, because I would interpret it differently. The hardest thing for an entertainer to do is to break that mold and all of a sudden become a regular, normal person. And, you know, although you want to have that separation, it's very difficult for people to do that. You know, I do believe that Michael Jackson can go into the supermarket as long as he doesn't show up in his yellow Rolls Royce and moonwalk into the cheese department, you know. If it's just, you know, trying to be normal. I have something that I'm able to base my emotions on, and that is that I have three sisters. And I have relatives and a family home in England, as well as many people that I respect and care about, and same goes for them with me. So I try to separate that. It's kind of interesting when people don't recognize me. That kind of feels more weird than anything. And I don't go out of my way to have people recognize me. My voice is very, very familiar to a lot of people, so it's kind of hard, you know. Oh, I didn't recognize your face, but I recognize your voice. It's for me, it's for everybody, it's the downtimes. This is the hardest thing for an entertainer. This is why some of entertainment, the entertainment world, you know, they have bad reputations. They're into drugs, they drink too much, you know, they beat their wives, they do this, that, the other, you know, I mean. It's only because of the pressure of having to go to be a regular person, and unless you can do that, you know, you're not going to be successful in the long run. Short-lived. Most of our careers are like a little fishbowl. You go bing, and all of a sudden you sort of go like everybody, and then it's sort of like that. And if you can sort of keep it like that, highs and lows, and realize why it feels that way, then you're able to, you know, so apply that to your other side of your life. But it's very difficult. It's easier said in theory than it is in the act. Yeah. You know, when we did the TV show, we met lots of celebrities, obviously. You know, there were fans. Paul McCartney, you know, sent a letter saying, could you send an autographed picture and a record to my daughter, you know, who now is, I think, works for Chanel or somebody in Paris as a designer. So there was lots of contact from lots of people. And in fact, there's lots of fans that were celebrities. You know, I've met Sylvester Stallone. Say, hey, Davey, how you doing? I'm a big fan of the Monkees. You know, hey, you know, so give us a job then, mate. You know, in your next movie. You know, Jack Nicholson, the Beatles. You know, Jimi Hendrix. Jimi Hendrix was on our show. He opened the show for about 8-10 shows. He was a regular kind of a guy. You know, he launched Foxy Lady off our show, and all of a sudden he became a cult. You know, had a cult following. You know, I think Woodstock or Monterey Pop also helped with that. It was interesting. Mickey saw him in a club in New York and asked him, you know, would he come on tour with us? And, oh, yeah, sure. You know, he didn't know who the Monkees were. Jack Nicholson was, you know, like doing spaghetti westerns, you know, like, you know, Clint Eastwood. And he was doing small parts. I think he showed up on Bewitched and shows like that, Jack Nicholson, in the early days. And then he was friends of Bert Schneider and Bob Rafelson, the Monkees producers. So he brought them in when we did the movie called Head. The Beatles, I've met. Yeah, I've met all the Beatles. Let me see. Ringo would be somebody that I'd seen more often over the years than the other boys. I'd been to sessions where Paul was there with Linda, and George Harrison was a frequent visitor to Mickey Dolenz's house, as was Mark Bolan and Ringo and Harry Nilsson and lots of other people. So, you know, you really take it in your stride. Obviously, I'm a big fan of the business. So anybody that's had any success at all or has any recognition or has been able to accomplish certain things, I know how hard it is to do this. So I have tremendous respect. It's just a very tough thing to deal with, you know, and it's a very lonely life being in the business. You know, you do a concert, we play to thousands of people, and then you go home to the hotel and you close the door and on goes the TV and you're potato chips, you know what I mean? Or if you want to go to the bar or you want to go out partying, you can, but you got to be on the bus the next morning, so it kind of gets difficult. So I can understand and identify with people that are in the limelight, you know, because I've sort of been a recognizable person for many years now, and it's not easy sometimes. Yeah. When the Monkees finished in the early 70s, late 60s, actually, we finished making the movie Head in 69. You know, we all had our individual careers to start thinking about, and I did a couple of TV shows. You know, I did the Tom Jones variety show, and I did the Tennessee Ernie Ford Thanksgiving Day special. But one of the most memorable occasions for me to go out as a solo artist was when I did an appearance on the Brady Bunch show, when I took Marsha to the prom. And I understand they mentioned my name in that show about 49 times. Davy Jones. And I listened to it the other day and they were right. They kept saying my name, you know. So it was that Marsha was supposed to be my president of my fan club. And she'd said she'd get me for the school prom or whatever it might be. And she did, because I'd written her a letter. And I do. I write letters all the time. I get lots of fan mail. And if it's not a personal thing that I write, and I can't write everybody, it's taken care of and people get, you know, whatever they're asking for, something signed, or if they've sent a picture, I do all that stuff. You know, we do it. But the Brady Bunch is, like, unbelievable, because people that didn't really see the Monkees, it's sort of like my daughter some years back saying, hey, Paul McCartney, have you heard this, Band on the Run? And she didn't know about the Beatles, but she knew about Band on the Run and Paul McCartney. So the Brady Bunch has sort of like been something that I think people think that my celebrity came from the Brady Bunch, with my little blazer on, which I still have, by the way. It doesn't fit so well. I can get it on, but it's kind of getting split underneath the arms every time I try it on for a joke. I did that, really. I had a song called Girl, Girl, Look What You've Done to Me, Me and My Whole World. Well, that was a song that I recorded as the theme song to a movie called Star Spangled Girl, which was Star Spangled Girl, yeah, which was a Sandy Duncan movie. And I just went on to advertise and promote the song. I thought it was a great idea. But thinking about it, it was the first time that I'd ever done a TV show which was like fantasy show, like Brady Bunch or Friends or whatever it might be, where they actually used Davy Jones, the celebrity. So that was a new plateau of, you know, relating for me as well. All of a sudden, the Monkees just came as a normal thing for me. You know, I'd been on Broadway and this was just another gig. But after the Brady Bunch, it was sort of like different, because all of a sudden I said, well, yeah, well, I guess I am a celebrity. I guess I'm Davy Jones from the Monkees, and then I'm on the Brady Bunch, which is another fantasy show. So, and then the movie came along, and they asked me to be in the movie, and I said, by all means, yeah, it was great fun. And they sort of spoofed it up a little bit, and had this middle-aged women there, you know, screaming, oh, Davy, and the young kids are going, what are they doing this for? But it happens all the time now. We go do concerts and little kids, you know, they're with their parents, and the parents are, you know, baby boomers, and they're my age and, you know, younger, most of them. And they, you know, they bring their kids. And so the kids are looking at the mum getting wobbly knees, you know, saying hello to Davy Jones 35 years later. So it's all been an enriching experience, you know, and it continues to be. I'm looking for answers, and I found it through my work and through my travelling. And that's the fortunate thing about it. I've been able to go all over the world. The Monkees went to about 36 countries. The show was shown, you know, dubbed in Japanese. You know, it was dubbed in Japanese. It was dubbed. We had a hit with I'm a Believer in Italian, you know. We had a hit in Mexico with Mickey singing Spanish, you know, singing I'm a Believer. So it was a lot more going on than ever it was seen, you know, generally in one dimension. So we had a heck of a career. As far as my career as an actor these days, I'm sort of limited to what I'm doing. Only because of my own sort of desire. I'm not a big, you know, the Brady Bunch was in the 70s, you know. I really, if I was acting, I want to be playing a character. I don't always want to be doing Davy Jones. And unless you are fully dedicated to going out and doing that and making sure that you get that and people see you in that light, you know, I've played Fagin in Oliver since playing the Artful Dodger. I've toured, I've played at the Mooney Theatre in St. Louis, and I've played in Kansas City at the Starlight Theatre. There's 12,000 seats for 2 weeks, sold out. And I'm talking like this, my dear. Come here, Oliver. Lovely to see you, my boy. But, you know, they see Davy Jones as this, I could hide neath the wings. And there's no getting away from that. There was when I play the characters and I do the parts. But as I say, you've got to be working at it all the time. I'm involved as much as people want me to be, and I'd love the challenge that acting brings you. I really feel that I've overlooked one area of my performing in theatre, and I would like to see in the next couple of years to come back to Broadway. And it has crossed my mind, you know, that yes, I was nominated for a Tony Award. Well, I want one, okay? And you can't get one unless you're here. So we're talking about different shows right now and things that could happen for me in the year 2003 or there around. And you've got to do that, you know. Opera singers are booked up 5 years in advance. Movie stars have got movies, you know, for 2004, 2005. You know, that's people putting their trust and in you. But you have to have that desire to do that. I have other things that I do. I've been married twice. I have 4 daughters, all girls. So I try to spend as much time as I can with them. You know, summer, holidays. They've got their own lives. I'm very interested in horses, have been all my life. Before I got into show business, I was an apprentice jockey in England in 62. I was there for a short while, and it's the bug. Once you're in, you're in. It's like the mafia, and I can't let it go. And I love horses. I ride every day when I'm at my own little place in Pennsylvania or in Carolina. And I got horses that are in training and running right now. I ride thoroughbreds. You know, it's not something you just like do. It's something that you've got to be, you know, very focused about. I bought a couple of horses at the sales this year in Keeneland, and hopefully they will turn out to be very, very good animals. You always have these expectations. I own a couple of race horses right now, moderate horses, but if you place them in the right place, it's like, as I'm saying, with the acting. It's where you decide to make your point. So it's not in the training. Horses train themselves, really. You let them go for exercise in the morning, you feed them, you bed them down, you brush them over. They have a wonderful life. The secret to training racehorses is in the entering. It's where you place them, who you place them with. And the secret to that is, in my own head, keep yourself in the best company and keep your horses in the worst. So that's the secret. And that's what I have in mind. And I know this is going to be showing on and off here and there, and time will go by, but I happen to, this very weekend, have a couple of horses running. It's the last steeplechase meeting of the season, and I have 2 horses, Maternity Leave and Market Neutral. And that's over those big jumps. It's not show jumping, it's racing. And it's a great, you know, it's a good passion for me. One day I'll be back in England and win the Grand National, so that's the big one. I love someone to get in my shoes one day, and just when I get up on a racehorse in the morning and my legs are up in my chin and I'm galloping along and I'm looking about and there's a couple of guys alongside and we're going 40 miles an hour, okay? And you're sitting pinned up on top of a horse. It's a thrilling feeling. It's amazing adrenaline rush, but, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 horses a morning doing this. The odds of you having some sort of mistake, this is an animal, and it's travelling, you know, and it's just, it's the fear of the unknown. This is what people have. I love it. I love the unknown. This is what I live for. I want to say to myself, there's got to be something more. There's going to be something more. As an actor, I hope that I get the challenges to be able to go and do it, you know, whether it be the Music Man or you know, whether it be, you know, sort of some well-thought-of show or part, you know. Hey, give us a job. So, you know, I enjoy working. I enjoy being tested. And this, to me, I wish that some people could see me sometimes, you know, doing these kinds of things, because it's a total, you know, contradiction to the way people feel about you. And I am, you know, you got to be kind of a little bit tough to do this, you know. You've got to have a little edge. And I think that's come from me having been in the business for so long and knowing what it's about. I've never gotten into directing or producing, or I kind of put my energy into these animals the same way as I would into a script that I would write or a production I would be involved in. So to me, it's my salvation. It gives me stability. It gives me a foundation to work off. And I say to myself, oh, well, I'm going out to work. I'm going out to make a TV show. I'm going off to do this and play in a concert, because when then I'll be able to spend time with my horses. So that's what we work for, is the recreation time. And it's very difficult to turn off. This is how people, you got to find something else. It's like within a relationship between two people. You've got to have that wall there in between the formality. It's important that you treat people with respect. You've got to respect racehorses. You've got to respect show business, because anyone that's done anything, whether it be the bands of today, NSYNC, Britney Spears, Backstreet Boys, and all the rest of those people, it's not easy doing what they do and having a success doing it. So I respect that. And I, you know, anyone that starts talking down about, you know, this group or that kind of music, that, hey, it ain't easy. You know, if there was any advice I could give to anybody about show business, you know, and anybody advice anyone can give me, please give me a call. But the thing is, my dad told me, nobody does what you do. So you're an individual. You're unique. You know, and so for all those kids and adults that are going off for auditions and meeting people and being tested all the time, there's nothing worse than being tested and not being chosen. That's really hard, you know, because you obviously take it personally. It's something that you, as an actor, you know, even when they did The Godfather, you know, Al Pacino and the other people in there, they had to audition for it. But it's always a test, and it's always something that you know, it's kind of scary in a way, because you, wait a minute, you know, I know how to act. I'm an actor. I can do anything. Why do I have to test to be able to display my art and show people what I can do? Never give up. You know, nobody does what you do. You know, just believe in yourself and focus on what you want to do. And there's a word that has helped me, and it's something you've got to believe in. It's called empowerment. You've got to take hold of this and say, I can do it. I know eventually somebody else is going to realize that I can too. So don't give up. Keep knocking on the doors, because the door to opportunity is marked push. And just don't stop wanting what... Never give up your dream. As everyone's always said it. And I'm never going to give up my dream. I want to keep doing it till I make it.